Hello there, and welcome to my garage. My name is Mads Christensen, and I am so excited that you are here with me today to learn about modern development in Visual Studio 2019. I have lined up a great set of demos for you, and I think you're really gonna like the direction we're taking Visual Studio. And especially now that we're working from home, our day-to-day work life is a little bit different, to say the least, and we have some great capabilities that are gonna help us with that. So I'm going to run you through some demos, and at the very end, there's a little surprise that I am very, very excited to show you. So make sure to stick around till the very end. I think you're going to enjoy this. I know I am. So let's just dig right in. So I've been working on this website for a little while. It's a proof of concept. It's a web shop. You know, it has a catalog of products. You can add them to your shopping cart or basket, and you can check out just like any other sort of basic shopping cart website. And let's take a look at the code here in Visual Studio. This is built using ASP.NET Core and C#. And I'm actually pretty happy with the code right now. So I want to move this to GitHub. And I want to do that so that I can start working on it with some of my colleagues, get some more people involved, and you know, hopefully we can ship this as a product. So what I'll do is that I'll use some of the new Git tooling that is in Visual Studio 2019. And you'll notice here we have a new Git top level tool menu, and I can now initialize the repository. Now this will add my repository to Git and make it ready to publish to any like GitHub or GitHub Enterprise or any other remote URL. Let's give this a name, like My Web Shop. Let's call it that. And you can see here, I can choose some settings specifically to publish this to GitHub. And I can click it, say yes. And now it is being published to GitHub. So let's take a look at that. So here's a list of my repositories. Let's refresh this page. See here, it's still working. And there it is. You can see my web shop is now on GitHub. And that was it, super simple. It's really, really made easy now. And so that can't be easier. You can see here that I have these little lock icons, which means that my solution is now under source control. And that was a great experience. Very, very easy. So one thing that I'm looking at is I forgot to add the last bit of debug logging to this particular file I got open. So I want to do a feature branch. And a feature branch is just the way I like to work. I like to create a branch for every time I have a new feature to add. So the way I do that is that I'm going to move into my Git tool window, and I'm going to create a new branch. And I'm just going to call this new feature like this. I can base it off an existing one like master and then check out that newly created branch. And that's it, done. So now I can add my logging right here. I'm going to save this. Just a simple debug write line. So now, if I go back to my Git window, you can see here the changes that are made. And I can now create a commit message. So added simple debug logging. And I'm going to commit this and push. Commit and push. That if I click this button, then I'm going to make the commit locally and push the branch out to GitHub. So now my colleague can go to GitHub and see the branch and continue the work on that branch. Hey, Pratik. Check out the new repo on GitHub.
Hmm. Mads just sent me a message on Teams. Let's see. Looks like he's asking me to check out his new repo on GitHub. Oh, it looks like he finally got around to some progress on his webshop app. So let's go and see what he's come up with. So I've got Visual Studio 2019 open, and from within Visual Studio, I can just clone down Mads' repository. So I'll go to the new Git menu and clone repo. And since he's probably added me as a collaborator, I can just search most likely and find his repository. There it is, my web shop. So click that and clone. And so you can see that I can find any GitHub repo or that I own or have access to. And I don't need to go to github.com to find URLs anymore. I can also browse Azure DevOps repositories if I need to in the same way. And so checking on this clone right now, I can see progress for clone showing up here. And when the clone is done, what it will do is activate Solution Explorer and open up the repo and load the solution for me right here. So moving to the Git tool window, we've really optimized the real estate of this on-the-side tool window for the Git commands you need while you're coding in order to minimize context switching. So I can see the branch that I'm on, master, and the other local branches. And I can jump to remotes as well. So Mads has created a new feature branch over here. So I can jump to that by hitting checkout. And then it'll check that branch out and move me into it. And I can view branch history as well. So if I go to new feature and look at the history of the branch to see if Maz has made any changes here. And it'll open up the entire history and show me all the commits to that branch. And I can see that he's added some debug logging. And yeah, he had mentioned earlier that he was having issues with his debug messages. So I can take a quick look. Double clicking on that takes me to the commit details. And I can see that he's changed the this one file as part of this commit. So again, a double click should great, open the diff view for me. And so this was the previous, and this is the change that Mads made. And it does look like he's added a debug message here. And it all looks okay to me. I don't know what Mads was concerned about. Maybe he was just using that as an excuse to show off all his awesome code so I could take a look at it. But we could add a little improvement over here. So let me just go to this file, Control Q search. And if I search for the file, I can get it here and open it up directly. So I'm in the file right now. And in this current state of affairs in the world, it's especially important to ask how we're all doing. So let me add a little extra caring with a how are you? And that has definitely tremendously improved upon this debug message. So there are different workflows for working with Git, and this is a small change. And so I'm sure Mads wouldn't mind if I just push this change directly to his branch. So I'm going to commit the change with the message updated debug message and commit that. Awesome. And so the commit was created locally. And of course, I'm going to push this directly. I'll use the shortcut button for push. And surely nothing will go wrong. There won't be any conflicts with just a one-line change, surely. And so that's done. I can see progress over here as well as a successfully pushed message. Awesome. Going back to Teams, that reminds me, I really should ask Mads how he's been. Hey Mads, how are you?
Okay, I'm going to go back to Visual Studio here, and I'm realizing that I have a typo. I need to fix. It should say capital ID like this. So I'm going to fixed capitalization. Going to commit this, and oh, I forgot. Because page ID is nullable, maybe I should say page ID if exists like this. I just did a commit for the typo. It's kind of annoying that now I have two little commits like this. So wouldn't it be nice if I could take this commit and combine with the commit I already did? Well, that's what the git amend feature is for. I can amend my previous commit with this change. So fixed capitalization and added conditional. There we go. So now I'm gonna do that. So commit all. So that was just a single commit now. I took my two different changes and merged them together basically. And I'm now ready to push it up. But because we're on GitHub, before we do any pushes, we want to do a pull. So I'm going to just click that button. And Visual Studio is now going to pull the latest changes. And oh, there was a merge conflict. And you can see here, this text right here that gets inserted. This is the worst. I hate when this happens because it makes me kind of afraid to do merging. And what if I don't merge things correctly now that I have to do this? It's kind of a hard problem and I really don't like doing this. So this is kind of the worst situation I can get into. But let's see if Visual Studio can do something to help us out. It says here that this file, we both modified it locally and remotely. So let's double click it. It now gives me a side-by-side view of the changes on each side. So on the left side, I have, what does it look like remotely? So these are my colleagues' changes up on GitHub. That looks like this. And over here, we have my changes. And which one do I want? I want mine. So I'm just going to click here. And you can see below, this is the results. Now I can see exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to click merge like this. And let me say, soft merge conflict like this, and we can commit. Here we go. So we're going to push this up. So this was a super easy way for me to handle those merge conflicts in a very nice way. I wasn't scared if this is going to happen again. I know what to do. I'm no longer scared of this scenario, and I kind of used to be a lot. So that's nice. Let's switch back to our master branch. So once we do that, we can see that the changes that we just made to add the debug statement is not in the master branch. They were made only to the new feature branch. So what we need to do to get that into master is to go up to our list here of branches, select our new feature branch, and say merge into current branch. Well, let's click that. Are you sure you want to merge new feature into master? Yes. And here's what we got. The changes are in, we're up to date, and I can now push that up to GitHub. So this entire Git workflow really makes it easy for me to work with my team, with GitHub, and I'm so happy that I no longer have to be afraid of merge conflicts. So this is such a great experience. So as you can see, we have a whole number of great improvements for working with Git and GitHub within Visual Studio. We've also worked on some new exciting improvements to our debugging and diagnostics capabilities within Visual Studio. Everything from working with asynchronous programming paradigms, which sometimes have been hard to debug, and all the way up to like profiling your entire applications to find those hard to find bottlenecks for CPU, memory, object allocation, and so on. So we can really squeeze the last bit of performance out of our apps. That's all very new and exciting, and I would love to show you some of these things. So back in Visual Studio, I will now go in. Not right now, Wes. I'm in the middle of recording a demo. You know, so I'll be right there with you. But okay.
Come play with me.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'll be right there. Let's see if we can hand this off to Leslie. Okay. Okay.
Mats, what's up?
Hey Leslie, can you do me a favor? I have to go play with my kids real quick. Why don't you do the debugger demo and I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, no pressure. Okay, since Mats has just entrusted me with carrying on the demo while he's away, I think this is a good time to talk about some of the cool new debugging updates that we've made recently. So I've already hit a breakpoint at the start of my set basket model async function, and I have several products that are already in my shopping basket within the app that I would like to inspect. In order to do that, I actually need to be at the end of this method. So instead of having to spam F10 or step over, what I can do instead is hover over the line of code that I want to run my program up to, and then select the green glyph icon that appears there. And as you can see, Visual Studio will fast forward all of my code's execution up to that point. That's a tool called Run to Click, which has existed in BS for a while, but definitely check it out if you haven't already. From there, I can hover over my basket model variable to view its data tip, and I'm interested in inspecting the contents of this items array. So looking at it at first glance, this is where all my products are going to be. And this is not the most useful view. Like, if I wanted to quickly inspect each product by its name, doing so would require expanding each of these out until I found the one that I'm most interested in. So luckily for us, we have a new feature called the Pinnable Properties tool. And this will allow me to favorite or pin a property to the top of my debugger displays. In my case, I want to identify each item by its product name, so I'm going to pin that using the pin icon here. And you'll notice that the product name property has been moved up to the very top of the list. And now I can quickly see each item based off of its name, which is a lot more useful to me. This also goes for if I were in the autos, locals, and watch windows where I can get that same experience. I also like to use search alongside this particular tool. I think it's extremely useful. So, for instance, if I wanted to locate the cup that I added to my basket, as you can see, there it is, alongside the pinnable properties display that I have here, which can save a lot of time as well. From there, you'll also notice that I'm currently in an async method. And while asynchronous code can be really cool as far as throughput goes and all that jazz, what's not cool is when you have to debug it sometimes. There can be a lot of mystery and complications that come with async code. So there's a couple options to help make your life a little easier if you have to do that. So first is we obviously have the tasks windows here, which will give you a tabular representation of all of your tasks that are currently awaiting, active, or scheduled. But for me, I'm more of a visual learner, so I'd like to use a tool called the Parallel Stacks window, which I'm going to search for right here. And as you can see, this is a graphical representation of what's going on with all of your tasks. And specifically with the task view, we've added several new changes in the recent update for Visual Studio, including the ability to see inactive tasks. So you can have tasks that are currently scheduled but are not currently active. And also, you can double-click on one of the methods, and you'll notice that the call stack will change to the corresponding call stack of that particular async method. And you'll know that it's async because it's got async in brackets on the side. So those were some of the many debugging updates that we've made recently. So now I'm going to check back in on Mads so that he can talk about all the really cool profiling features that we've added.
Thank you, Leslie, for doing that debugger demo. That was wonderful. Speaking of debugging, have you ever had the th that issue when you're writing an application, you're testing it, everything is great, the performance is fantastic, it's ready to go to production, and you push it out to production, only to get a phone call from a customer saying, "Why is this so slow? What did you do?" It sounds familiar? Well, let's take a look at what we can do in that scenario. with some of the new profiler tools. Back in Visual Studio, I was not able to reproduce the performance issue locally that was seen in production. So I've been running a tracing tool called .NET Trace on my production application to gather information that I can then transfer to my local laptop and open in Visual Studio, as I will do right here. I captured around 30 seconds of the running app, and I now have information about all sorts of things that is really handy for me to get a good overview over. And on the top, you can see I have a timeline of those 30 seconds. And at the bottom, I have sort of various different reports, one of them being CPU usage. So this is super helpful if I want to find any hot paths through my code, and it will help me diagnose and see where my expensive code is. And if I, in the timeline, want to narrow in on a certain particular time period here of my running app, you can see that the reports underneath filter to that. I can see all the events. And as a new thing, I can see my SQL queries and how long they took. So in this case, that's really, really significant, because typically I have a different database, like with fewer records locally that I code against in my development environment than what I have in my production environment. So this is where a tool like this really shines. I can clearly see a difference between my production environment and my local development environment. And from here, just navigate super easily to the code that had my SQL statement. And I'm actually using Entity Framework. And so I can drill in further. I can start optimizing my Entity Framework code, and I can start reducing those numbers so I get better performance. So this is a huge difference here than what I had earlier. I can really narrow in and see what's going on in production and fix things up. But it's not just CPU and SQL, it's also memory. And so I've taken another trace using that same tool from my production environment that will contain information about object allocations. And you can see here from the live objects at the top, we can see a pattern where more and more memory is allocated, more and more objects are put in memory, and then it goes down because garbage collection happens. That's that red line right here. That means that garbage collection happened. And then it starts building up again, right? So there's a pattern. So let's take a look at what actually is going on. So let's narrow in on this. And now we can see here at the bottom on the left side that I have all my different object allocations. And at the very top, I have byte arrays. So a lot of bytes, and it's taken up quite a bit of memory. So let me just click that, and that will give us some more detail. So it will actually show me a backtrace. So now I can see, where do I allocate all these bytes? And it shows me exactly the class and the method. And so it's super easy for me just to go in and find out where that was and how to fix it. So if you look here, you can see that I read a file from disk and move it into a byte array. And then I add that byte array to an image dictionary. And there's some inefficiencies here. I'm definitely allocating more than I have to. And I didn't really know that before now. So that's just fantastic that I get this extra level of insight into my running production app. And of course, if you can reproduce these issues locally, then you can run this profiler tool right here from within Visual Studio. So here you can see I'm about to start one, and I can select what type of tracing I want. Do I want .NET object allocations, or am I more interested in CPU and SQL database queries, for instance? So I got it all right here. I can fully inspect my app, and I love it. So as you can see, these new exciting features for the debugger makes it much easier for us to narrow in on any problem areas in our code. And the profiler updates makes it easier than ever to figure bottlenecks in our CPU, memory, or SQL queries so that we can squeeze that last bit of performance out of our applications. Now I want to talk to you about something called Visual Studio Code Spaces. A code space is a complete development environment that's hosted in the cloud and that Visual Studio now have the capability to connect to. That means that the source code, the debug, the building, the compilation, the running of the app when you hit F5 actually takes place in the cloud inside the code space instead of your local machine. When you're using Visual Studio connected to the Visual Studio code space, it all feels exactly the same as before, but you're no longer using your own hardware to run these very heavy tasks. And that opens up for a whole new set of possibilities. And to show you just some of them, I prepared a little scenario that I think you're going to enjoy. Let's pretend that I'm joining a new team and my manager, Maria, is sending me an email welcoming me aboard. And that email contains a link that I can use to set up my development environment on my new machine here. I'm going to click that, and that will take me into the Visual Studio Codespace portal and go straight into the creation flow here. Now, that link that Maria sent me has information about the name of the Codespace, the GitHub repository to clone into the Codespace, and what type of instance is required to run the app that is what my team is working on. So all I have to do is click create. I could modify any of those values if I wanted to, but I'm sure Maria knows what she's doing. So I'm just going to click create, and that's going to take me straight into the new web editor, which is now initializing. And what's happening is that it's cloning the repo into the code space. It's making sure that all the SDKs and runtime components and everything else that's needed for my app to run and build, debug, and unit test to run, it's all there. And then it opens up in something that looks like Visual Studio Code, but it's in the browser. Now, it's because it kind of is Visual Studio Code, and so we get the same level of productivity that we get from Visual Studio Code right here in the browser, including any extensions that we might have installed. They will all work right here. And I can now go explore the repository for the very first time. But I can actually also code. I can open a file here. This is C#. I can edit this. I can actually make my very first commit a matter of seconds after clicking that link Maria sent me. This is absolutely astonishing. This is the fastest way you can ever create a new environment and onboard to a team. This is, we've never seen anything like this before. I'm very excited for this, as you can hear in my voice. But let's go back to my list of code spaces here. I only have the one that I just created, but you could see multiple here if I had them. I'm now going to open this code space in Visual Studio. If I didn't have Visual Studio, it would launch the installer that would install everything I needed to be able to run my repo. But I have Visual Studio, so now I'm going to just select which version of Visual Studio to use, and I'm going to select, I have the latest preview version, I'm going to use that one. And that will open up Visual Studio and provide it with the information needed to connect to that specific code space automatically. So that's what Visual Studio is doing right now. It's negotiating permissions and credentials, passing it back and forth to establish a fast and secure connection to the online code space. And we can see here we have it even says the name of the code space up in the top banner here, and the repo is already visible to us in Solution Explorer. We can open it. We see the exact same content as we did in the web editor a moment ago. But I'm going to open this in Solution View. This is how most people work with .NET in Visual Studio, and so that's also my preferred way. And so this is just keeping up with what makes me happy and most productive. And here we see all my projects listed and files and so on. So let's take a look in the Codespace Manager UI here. I can see the list of all the code spaces that I've got. I can, you know, connect to them, I can delete them, and so on. But I can also create new ones with the exact same amount of information that I used in the portal on the web just a moment ago. And this makes it super easy for me to stand up a new code space and get going with some new experiments or whatever else I want to use one for. So very handy stuff. Now, just to see what level of power I get in my newly created code space, let's go and jump into the terminal. And I'm going to just type out an environment variable to show me how many CPU cores I've got to play with here. And you see it's 8. I got 8 cores available in the Codespace Online, which is twice the amount of cores that I have on my laptop that I'm right now recording this demo on. And that's actually my main machine here working from home. So you can see that's actually a significant difference. It's twice the amount of CPU cores. But it's actually more than that, because I always have a bunch of services and programs and applications running locally on my machine. I got a mail client, multiple browsers, and a bunch of other things that all use CPU and memory and disk, and they all compete for the same finite resources that I've got in the hardware that's in my laptop. So when I'm developing any application using Visual Studio, that is, it's never going to be given the full amount of horsepower that I have available because of those other applications. But here it's dedicated. So actually, let's just see it do a full build, and we can see what that looks like in my task manager. You see, I'm using around 50% of my CPU right now, and I'm doing that because I am recording both my screen and video and audio. And that takes about half of my CPU. So you can see that that would actually then have taken quite a long time then to compile my solution in Visual Studio, because I only have half the horsepower available right now at this particular moment. But the building is already done. It's over. It happened so fast. And my machine didn't break a sweat. It didn't do anything. And it didn't do anything because it didn't have to. All the hard work was done in the Codespace Online. My machine didn't build it. The Codespace did. And that's really a significant thing, because I can now have multiple instances of Visual Studio open connected to different online Codespaces. Let's run the app. Now, this is an ASP.NET Core app, and so when I run one of those, it opens up in the browser. And this is my browser on my laptop, on my hardware, connected to localhost, as you can see here. But it's being port forwarded to the code space that actually runs the app. So IIS Express is actually running in the code space hosting my app. And I can use the developer tools here in the browser to debug everything just like I can with any other website, no matter where they're hosted. So I get to keep my exact same workflow. I get to keep my same developer tools in my favorite browser. And any extension that I might have is still working. So I don't have to learn anything new. I don't have to do anything different. It all just works the way I would expect it. And that's just absolutely fantastic. Now, I'm noticing that I have a margin issue up here in the by the logo. So let's just do a screenshot here. Let's give it a little squiggle here so we can see what it is. Because I want to send this to a friend that I know, she knows a lot about front-end development. And she might know exactly where in my code here I can find the problem. So let's see what she has to say. And let's just paste in the screenshot here as well. Let's see if Kendra knows how to fix the margin issue. Could you start a live share, she says. Yes, what a great idea. So let me go back into my Visual Studio and start a new live share session. I click the live share button, and that will start a new session and copy a link into my clipboard. I'm now sharing that link with Kendra. When she clicks that link, her Visual Studio will try to connect to mine and join my live share session. And you can see that's what she's doing right here. She's now joined, and up top we can see her initials. You can have multiple people join the same session, so you can have a whole row of initials there for the various different people. And she can now see the same thing I can. She has the same files in her Solution Explorer in Visual Studio running locally on her machine. And she's joined not just my Visual Studio, but the code space as well. Look like she already found the issue. I'm not touching the keyboard here. She's doing all the navigation. I'm just following her. And it looks like there's a typo there. Okay, Kendra, excellent. That I'm sure will fix it. So thank you. Let's just go ahead and save this file and then run the app again to see if we have fixed the issue. So very cool. Kendra was able to connect directly to my code space and to my live share session. And the problem is fixed. I now have the right margin. It's all aligned. Kendra, that was awesome. Thank you so much. It just works. So let's go back to the browser and add this product here to the shopping basket. I just want to make sure everything looks fine. And there seems to be a problem here. The total doesn't seem to be the same as the unit price here. So something is wrong. So let's see if we can debug and find out what the problem is. And remember that the debugger actually runs in the code space online, and the browser that I'm in here runs locally on my machine. So let's see how all that works. Let's go back to Visual Studio, and I'm gonna open the class here that's responsible for the total price, and let's set a breakpoint right here. And then let's go back and refresh the browser to hit that breakpoint. So now I was refreshing the browser locally on my machine here, and you can see the breakpoint hits in Visual Studio exactly like you would expect. And I can now see here that the total amount here is correct. It seems to be what the unit is, right? 1950. But then I do a math rounding where I remove the decimals here, do zero decimals, which makes it round up to 20. And that was the problem. So that's an easy thing to do. So let me just change that right here. So even debugging is the same as we're used to, even though that we have this mix between things running locally and things running in the Visual Studio code space. So now you can see how Visual Studio code spaces can be super helpful for us in a variety of ways, regardless of what your workflow might be. And the way that we can scale our maybe sometimes limited hardware here in our home offices into the cloud to take advantage of that immense amount of power that's available for us there. That's just, it's fantastic, and we're so excited to very soon be able to share this with you. We're going to go into a private preview, and in order for you to join that preview, you need to go sign up at the website aka.ms/vsfutures-signup. So go ahead and do that right now. Hit the pause button on this video and go sign up, and then come back here. Oh, you're back. Welcome. Good thing to have you here again, because I have just one more thing I want to show you. You know, we do a lot of prototypes and proof of concepts throughout the year. Some of them we throw out, some of them make it into an extension for the Visual Studio Marketplace, and some of them make it into the product itself. And here today, I want to show you a prototype that I hope is going to make it into the product. I love this thing, and we don't know when it's coming. We don't know exactly what the end result is going to look like, but we can clearly see the direction that this feature is going, and I think you're going to like it a lot. So let's take a look. So let's head back into Visual Studio into my web application. Here I have a new class that I've added. I've noticed that on my website when I upload new product images that sometimes they're too large and I want to resize them to a smaller size that fits sort of my UI on the website. So I have a method called resize that takes a file path, a width, and a height. Very basic stuff. On top of that, I added a NuGet package called ImageSharp. So I've never used this API before here, this NuGet package, but I was told by some colleagues that this was a good one to use. So I'm going to try it out. And so whenever I am faced with new APIs for the first time, I kind of let IntelliSense guide me, right? So I'm guessing that there is a resize method here. And it appears that there is not a resize method. Maybe there's one that is like has a similar name but different. No, here, mutate. All right, so let's do mutate. I want to mutate it to a smaller size. And what does it take as a parameters? Oh no, an action that has a, it's a generic, it takes a interface. Okay, this looks complicated. You know, I should probably go and do a web search for how to use this mutate method. Maybe I'll go to Stack Overflow. Maybe there's documentation for this library. You know, with a lot of these NuGet packages, sometimes there are documentation, sometimes there's not. And sometimes web searches are good, sometimes they're not. So it's a hit and miss. So, but that's probably what I'll do. I'll find something that might be close to what I need and then change it and massage it into what I wanted to do from there. So that's usually my workflow. It's not the most optimal. What if I could do something a little smarter? What if I could take this mutate method and right click and say, find all references. And you'll see here, first I get, of course, the file I'm in, but see this. Now they came in from the web, from GitHub specifically. I can now see how other GitHub repositories are using this particular method. You see, there's one here that does some resizing. So that looks good. I click it and it opens up. Here's a read-only view. And you can see here, here's the exact code that I need to resize. So this file is, you see it open in Visual Studio, but it's actually from someone else's GitHub repository. It's not from one of mine or my organization. It's from somewhere out there on the internet. And this is exactly what I need. I didn't have to go to a browser. I didn't have to go anywhere. And I can simply just use this here and change the parameters. Whoa. And here you are. I was able to figure out how to use this API in a very, very easy way, right? This is much easier than it ever was. And I'm so excited for this. This is such a productivity booster, and you know, I wish I had this 20 years ago. It would have changed everything. And so I'm a big fan. I hope you like it too. So there you have it, folks. We're at the end of the line. 45 minutes has passed and our time together is up. Thank you so much for spending it with me. I'm honored that you did, and I hope that you had a great time. We for sure had a great time putting together all these demos and, of course, building all the features that I hope is going to make you more productive and you more happy as a developer. So thank you. And don't forget to sign up for the Visual Studio Code Spaces preview. And here at the end, I showed the rich code navigation, and you can sign up for that as well. So you actually can try that as soon as they are ready to share it. So it's the same link that you sign up for Visual Studio Code Spaces. So go there once and make sure that you check the checkboxes for both Visual Studio Code Spaces and Rich Code Navigation. So with that, it's time to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.